Welcome back, everyone. I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 28 of the Art Scene Podcast. My guest today is Bay Area artist Muse Sese, who recently opened his first solo show over at Part 2 Gallery in Oakland. But before I play our conversation, I wanted to tell you about a couple things that are happening right now in the Bay Area. The first is a group exhibition titled You Had to Be There over at Swissnecks Gallery in San Francisco. The exhibition is a collaborative group show between students from the California College of the Arts and the Cantonal School of Art of Ballet in Sierra, Switzerland. The show questions the role of care and myth-taking in the preservation of public works by exploring the legacy of such practices in both San Francisco and Sierra, Switzerland. Co-curated by former guest of the podcast, Amanda Noodleman, it runs till April 20th, so check it out soon if you happen to be in the area. Then, my friends over at Bass Arena Gallery also recently opened a new show titled With a Little Bit of Luck, We'll Make It Through the Night, which is a dual show featuring American artist Carissa Potter and Danish artist Mie Mogensen. The exhibition is a bit of a reunification, as both artists worked in a collaborative manner while taking part of an artist residency in Iceland in 2017. The show retraces the bond between them through a series of large-scale drawings and a sculptural display, as well as an interactive performance for the brief period of time that the two of them are back together. The show runs till May 5th, and you can see it over at Bass Arena Gallery, which is located at the Minnesota Street Project. Alright, so as I mentioned earlier, my guest today is Muse Sese, which I had the pleasure of meeting over at his studio to talk about his first solo show titled Domestic Dive, as well as the preparation that went behind it, and we also discussed his recent art residency over at Facebook and his educational background in sociology, which has some influence on his work. I had a great time talking to him and also getting to know him, and I hope you enjoy the same as you listen to our conversation. And now, here it is. One of the things I was going to start with was, you know, was mentioned that we both work at the same place.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I'd never like to talk about where I work at, but we work at the same art institution. Yes. But you're on the installation crew.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I'm in the galleries, I'll hear someone yell one time, "Hey, SoCal," and they referred to you as SoCal one time.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and I was at first, because I'm usually the guy,
the SoCal guy.
So I looked up and I said, "Is someone calling me?"
Yeah,
and then I looked up and they were like talking to you, but which was a little bit like cool for me because I don't really meet a lot of SoCal guys up here.
Yeah, yeah, surprisingly, not too many. I mean, granted, how close it is, but yeah. From Southern California.
What city or what town did you grow up in?
I was born in Long Beach.
Okay.
And then I went to high school in Anaheim.
How is living in growing up in Anaheim?
Anaheim?
Yeah.
To be honest, I went to high school in Anaheim Hills. Uh-huh. So that was like the suburb of Anaheim, which is like a suburb of Orange County, which is like a suburb of LA. So it's just like this meta suburban lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, because it's interesting because my brother went to Fullerton.
Oh, yeah.
And my brother's part-time job was, of course, working at Disneyland.
Yeah, a lot of people worked at Disneyland. Which that part I liked.
So you ended up working there too?
No.
Okay.
Never worked at Disneyland. I would hate that. That's not my style. But I knew a lot of people that worked there, and I knew ways at the time, like when I was in high school, to sneak into Disneyland. So I had like a really great Disneyland experience.
Oh, yeah.
I've never paid.
Yeah. I'm the same way with my brother. I never had to pay.
So when you don't have to pay and, you know, you're kind of like sneaking in or getting in for free, and then you go in at like, because Disneyland was open till midnight most nights. So I would go around like 6 p.m., 6, 7 p.m., and then just hang out at night. No lines. It's cool.
Yep.
Not like hot.
On a Wednesday night when there's like no crowds barely. Yeah.
It was great. You just go with your friends and just go on all the rides.
So, is all your family from the Orange County area or?
I mean, originally my father is from West Africa.
Oh, really?
From Sierra Leone.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And, mother is from Oregon. But yeah, my father's still in Anaheim. Yeah, a lot of families. Most of my family is in Southern California. I still have some family in Freetown, Sierra Leone. So.
Wow. Have you visited?
No, I have not. Unfortunately, I've had multiple plans to visit kind of fall through throughout my life, usually due to issues in Sierra Leone.
Yeah.
Like when I was younger in the 90s, I was going to go, but then a very brutal civil war broke out, mm-hmm. and that lasted about a decade, so I couldn't really go around then. And then more recently, my grandma, who had been living here in the States with us, she went back to Freetown, and I was going to go visit her, and I remember seeing her off, and I was like, I'm going to, all right, grandma, don't worry, I'll see you in like 6 months, I'm going to get my ticket, plan a trip. 2 months after she left, Ebola broke out over there, and it was bad. Like, my grandma, she was very scared, and like she, her neighbors got it and passed away.
Yeah.
From Ebola. So
yeah. Was that outbreak like about 4 or 5 years ago? Right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it's contained now, and it's good. And so I'm trying to plan another trip there, when I can.
You know, you growing up in Anaheim, did you always want to be an artist? Was this something that even as a kid you were always like painting and drawing or whatever?
Yeah. So, yeah, basically growing up, I don't know how it really started. Well, actually, I do. I mean, I think my mother and my aunt really encouraged me at a really young age, like baby age, to be creative. And one of my earliest memories is being really, really excited about, you know, scribbling on a piece of paper and then my mother and aunt being just like overly excited about this thing that I just made.
Yeah.
And then putting it up on the wall, and they would always call it masterpieces. And I was just like, I think at a young age, I was just like really into the fact that they were into it.
Yeah.
And like kind of like acknowledged me as like a person, you know, and it really stuck with me. And that, I mean, that's like, I'm like 4 or 5, like this is pretty young. And ever since then, I've just like always had some type of creative thing that I was doing. Like when I was in Anaheim, I wanted to be an architect.
Yeah.
At one point, I wanted to be a car designer. I wanted to be a fashion designer. So I went through a bunch of like potential professions, kind of like you do as a child. They all tended to be around design and around art. So it was always kind of there.
Was your mom and your aunt like really into art? Like, what was the
mom?
Or was it just being encouraging? Because
my mom was a painter, but she didn't really like pursue it very strong. Which she has paintings and drawings.
Yeah.
But I think they more so were just wanting to be really encouraging. That's just kind of their thing.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, design has always been, which we'll get to a little bit later when we talk about your work, because I look at it and I can see a little bit in there. But so, you know, through high school, was this something that you decided when you were going to get out of high school, you were going to go to college and pursue art?
No. Mm-mm. No, I have. It's been a really natural and gradual progression.
Yeah.
I once considered it in going to, back when I was in high school, I was looking at CCA. I was really like into the idea of going to art school, but ultimately I was like, no, I didn't want to do that. I've always kind of saw art to be my own thing.
Yeah.
And I, at that age, when I was looking at going to colleges, I thought that going to art school would taint the process. And
why is that?
Well, because people are telling you what to do.
Yeah,
and I really enjoy this natural progression of figuring it out on my own and kind of like doing what I feel like I want to do. And learning a lot of the art school, the benefits of art school for me would have been like the technical application of mediums and things like that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I have, you know, just being someone who like cares about that, I have picked it up and I have made mistakes and it's in a process of learning that I really enjoy with it. So I didn't want to go to art school for that reason and for money reasons, because it was just way too expensive.
Yeah.
And instead, I really wanted to study something that I think would make me a better person. So I studied sociology. Again, not because I wanted a job in sociology, but I just valued learning that. Because I wanted to learn about people and how we interact with each other.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to SF State.
Okay.
But after, like...
So that's what brought you up here?
No, not even. Really? Yeah, I just ended up going to SF State by being here. I came up here for the art culture, and because growing up in Anaheim, being like into art. After I got out of high school, I went to Costa Mesa to live on my own. Which, if I don't know if you know Costa Mesa, yeah. It's maybe like 15 minutes from Anaheim, but yeah. I just wanted to not be at my house and to like live on my own.
Yeah.
So I got an apartment over there. That's when I was making a lot of like experimental projects on the side. I was just kind of like using weird canvases and like painting on boxes, doing things outside too, like stencil graffiti type stuff.
And this is before you went to college. This is like what?
This is before. This is in community college. I went to Orange Coast College.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So college in school was always kind of like on the side, and life was in the forefront.
Yeah.
I had a friend that went to Berkeley, right out of high school. Mm-hmm. So I would come up here and had those experiences up here, just with the friends. And it was so different, mm-hmm. you know, people were not concerned about what people were wearing and things like that, like those superficial things that were pretty prevalent in Orange County.
Yeah.
You know, and where in Orange County, I felt like this token artist, black guy with dreads who I never really fit in, but like I was accepted as not fitting in a way, you know?
Yeah. No, I feel like,
which was fine. And I have like tons of friends from my time in Orange County, but coming out here was like, really a game changer. I just felt a little bit more free. The arts community was just more like accessible, and everyone was kind of making things just for the sake of making it, and not for like in Orange County it was like you made art that's like cute and weird, you know, it's like mm-hmm. no one really
what a great hobby.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you're in LA, if you like took it to the next level, you'd go to LA,
right?
And it's from my understanding, it was like very you know, very cutthroat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, when I came up here, I was like, wow, this is nice. This is chill.
Yeah. So you go to college, and so for the most part, like, what was college to you then? Like, if that was on the side and really the forefront was really like, you just wanted to be mm-hmm. part of the art community. You wanted to make art. You wanted to just grow as an artist. So what was like college to you then? What was the, I guess I asked, like, why did you want the degree, I guess?
College was great. I loved college. I got to study sociology, and that's right. something I'm very interested in. And I really, really enjoyed studying sociology in San Francisco specifically. They have a great – at SF State, they had a great program. Mm-hmm. You know, it was – it was like I love learning and I love school, but I like it on my terms, you know. I like learning what I want to learn, so like doing that kind of work, and you know, where it was mainly just some of our classes where we just discussed current issues and how we felt about them, and it was really informative. And I also like kind of snuck into the printmaking department.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you took any visual
art
classes. Yeah,
so I just took like the entry level ones, and you weren't really supposed to take the upper division ones unless you were a major in the, but I just was there so much. Anytime I wasn't in sociology, like in an actual class, I would just go to the studio, the printmaking studio, and work on things. Mm-hmm. And then I chose to do like focus on printmaking because that was an aspect of art that I didn't know, you know, I didn't know how to do. So I really felt with school, it being like this learning process where I didn't want to go do painting at school because I already like paint, and it just, I can learn that elsewhere, where printmaking, I didn't know, I was really interested in, and you kind of need a studio to do that. You can't just, like, it's hard, like, if you wanted to do, like, copper plate Italia etchings, that's not easy to do, just pick up, you know. You have to have the facilities and you have to have an acid bath and
you definitely needed like the resources like an institution like a school would provide.
So I really felt like I'm happy with the way I took advantage of the situation.
No, I feel you, man. I was a history major in college, but I minored in photography. And it was, again, the same, like, I would have this, I guess, kind of almost double life, but where I would like be this hardcore history major, wrote papers, read the books, whatever. And on the side, I was in the art department, and I was like in because I was always there, but I wasn't an art major. I was just a minor.
And it was really interesting. I mean, I loved it because in the printmaking department, I didn't really have to care about the grade so much. So I was really like cavalier with, like, if I, you know, like if I didn't like the prompt, I would just do whatever I wanted anyways and then just be like, all right, there it is. Sorry, you know, I didn't listen to you. And it was always funny because, like, I would have to, like, leave sometimes and be like, all right, I have to go write this paper. And people would be like, wait, what? Like, what are you doing again? So it was fun. And I could have art majored. I could have minored in art, I should say. I could have minored in art if I took one more art history class. And I was like, no, that's okay. And I declined the minor because it just didn't really matter.
Did you ever take what you learned from sociology and did it ever seep into your work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the time. Sociology seeps into everything. It just is like a different way of thinking about things, a different way of it like has helped me hone in like techniques of looking at alternate perspectives and how I approach those alternate perspectives. So, I mean, it's helped me in everything, how I interact with people, how I think about the world. And but I have, it's all piece by piece. So I can't really speak for the work as a whole, but a lot of it does have like deeper social issues that like are circulating through my mind while I'm making them.
And so during this time, like, because you, by this point, before you moved up here to go to SF State, you had already lived on your own. You were just doing, you know, on your own schedule, basically going to classes, and then you moved up here still doing kind of the same, I would assume, right? Just going to college. What, I mean, at an early age, were you already finding yourself in the art community? Because I'm envisioning, like, I didn't even think about being part of an art community until I was done with my 4 years of college and I was out. But you had the ability where you were kind of doing both already at, like, 18, 19. So I'm wondering, when you moved up here, was that the case too?
Well, it's just become more, it's just gotten more and more refined and more, like, serious, you know? Where, I was in, I guess, an arts community, but it's hard to say. And I mean, I made art all the time in my spare time. And I think people knew that about me, but it wasn't really a community that, it wasn't like, a lot of other people were doing that, and like people were, there weren't like people coming into my home and being like, oh, let me get like a studio visit. You know, it was like I was just making stuff in my room that didn't really, it's weird to think now because it didn't really, it was really raw because it was just, it served no purpose besides me making it, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't like I was working towards a show. I wasn't showing it. I wasn't doing anything with it at all.
Yeah.
I was just making it. It for me, and that was it. If anyone else wanted to like come in my room and see it, then they would probably see it. But ultimately it was just for me, and it's always been just a really personal process.
And I would assume by this point in time, by the time we got to SF State, the whole idea of being a professional designer or whatever was gone, right? At this point, you were
I've never, well, honestly, I've been not even like, I never thought that I would be like have a career in art. I actively did not want that.
What did you want?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know what I wanted. I mean, after college, after SF State, I wanted to bridge the gap between the social importance of art. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of putting my two passions together. And I did that briefly by working at the SF Arts Commission and working on projects there. I thought, I still am like, I really love it, the Arts Commission.
What kind of work were you doing for them?
I was an intern in the policies and evaluations department. So I was doing demographic research on the cultural centers that were that are owned and operated by the city. So there's a bunch of cultural centers like Soma Arts, mm-hmm. and the Mexican Heritage Center, and the African American Arts and Cultural Complex, AAACC. So I was looking at those and looking at how other cities ran those departments and making comparison like evaluations to how we ran ours to other major cities in the United States. Mm-hmm. And then on the side I was doing like a little bit of demographic research and trying to come up with a sociological survey that can accurately quantify the importance of public art, mm-hmm. Which is really hard to do. I never got to finish that. That's like a really long project that I was starting to do with my supervisor. But I left the internship before I could finish that one. That's really hard to do, you know, like find the data that proves that the effects of public art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever want to like, I mean, if you were offered the opportunity to work full time for them, would you do it?
Right now?
Yeah.
That's so hard. Yeah. I've thought about that because they have had positions opening up and I've been working with them again, but now as an artist, mm-hmm. which is fun to go back now as an artist.
Yeah.
You know, where I was crunching numbers before. So it's hard to say. I probably would like that a lot, but I'm so into like where I am right now and kind of like on the verge of full-time artists besides whenever I work at SF MoMA.
Yeah. So like if anything, whatever job you have is really to pay the bills, but you prefer to spend a lot of your time
in the studio. Art. Yeah. It's, we'll see how it goes. I think like eventually, you know, as I grow older, I'll probably want to either work at the Arts Commission or work in education in academia.
Yeah. Yeah. So that sounds appealing to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to be a teacher, but I probably have to go get a degree first.
Yeah. Would you want to go back to grad school?
I would go to grad school. Yeah. I really do like saying that. I haven't gone to school.
Yeah.
Because grad school. So yeah. Well, even an undergraduate in art, there's so many artists like come out of school and they're like, well, what do I do? And I'm just like, I don't know. I didn't even go to school. You know.
Well, I mean, you did go to school.
I did go to school,
but you just didn't go through the 4 year. Like, you didn't major in art, where you were in art classes and you were being taught like this is how you paint. This is the history of it. Mm-hmm. Like this is like, and you didn't even go to grad school to even where most people do to kind of or hone in on their mm-hmm. craft.
Yeah.
But you kind of are doing that on your own already, which is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think by the time I go to grad school, I think it'll be really fun.
Yeah.
Because I'll wait until I get bored with what I'm doing now. And then I'm like, all right, I need to like, do some weirder stuff. So, I think I'll eventually go to grad school.
Would you go for art? Would you go for something more, something
that's
else?
That's been the question.
You went the sociology route.
If you asked me like 2 years ago, I would have been like, I'm leaning towards sociology.
Yeah.
You know, because basically I didn't get the job at SFAC that my internship was going to turn into a job, pretty much a job opened up.
Right.
And I didn't get it. And I lost it to a, you know, Berkeley MFA city planning.
Yeah.
You know, is fair. I was bitter, but, you know, that person had master's degree in the field of what we were doing. So at that point, I was like, well, if I want to do anything here, I'm going to need a master's degree. And at that point, I didn't know if that's what I wanted to do. So I kind of like backed away from it and focused on art and then also working at the museum.
I want to talk about your work a little bit. You know, I was reading up on you online and stuff. And, you know, there was one article, I think it was in Juxtapose magazine, and the big thing they talked about, which is the first thing that I saw when I first saw your work, was they talked about how your work is kind of described as abstract painting, but mixed in with a little bit of figurative painting. At least that's how they described it. And they had you respond to it a little bit in the article. But, you know, it's funny because on my end, if I look at it, at first glance, that's what I see, right? At first, if I see one of the more hard edge paintings that you have, I would say abstract, and then you go to the more like where it's not as hard edge and you see the strokes a little bit more, you know, I would go the figurative route. It's a mixture of both. But one of the things I wanted to mention, and again, feel free to respond and tell me what you really describe your work to be. This is just me looking at it. But I started noticing, you know, when I see abstract and figurative painting, I think of like old 1920s art, right? Mm-hmm. Like avant-garde. And in a time that where most of the art that I've been seeing or like seems to be popular is the more conceptual mixed media type stuff in the contemporary art world. But when I see your stuff, I don't think of it as like the old 1920s, like avant-garde, because it still feels new to me. Like it still feels new and fresh. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting, like, because we don't have anything else to describe it. Like that's what we go off of, right? Is the old stuff.
Yeah.
What would you describe it as?
I think I have said figurative before in the past, but it's more, less of the figure and more of an abstract composition that represents a space.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all representational.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I give enough, just like enough to, for people to see that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not abstract to the point where it's conceptual. It's conceptual, but you can feel for this space. And I think a lot of it comes from, like, I like the idea of, like, the viewer being in kind of control of what they see in the space and how they develop the narrative that on their own. I do agree that this, a lot of it, it takes directly from early modernism. And I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
And especially when I see people who are really focused on doing something completely new, which is great. And but I like, the way I think about it is just having like this starting point and then creating something new from that. I really am like focused on creating something new, but in these like more traditional means, you know, because it's a two-dimensional canvas.
Yeah.
I'm using like hard edge shapes, which was really popular, you know, in the 20s and on to the 50s and 60s. But
which I've seen like a, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, like I think of art history and history itself as a swinging pendulum, right?
Yeah.
Like so old ideas come back in a new, fresh way.
Yeah.
And sometimes they get old again and whatever, but yeah, like it is in this method, this like a 1920s method, but you're taking a new spin to it. And I've seen a resurgence of that recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's kind of got their unique twist to it.
Well, I think there's just more to say in those dialogues, you know. It's just because like someone has like had a similar thought a long time ago doesn't mean that it still isn't a new thought, you know. So I really do enjoy aspects of like traditional painting and throwing that. I mean, even with this, like some of these paintings, I'm putting these like wooden floating frames around it, which automatically like dates it kind of, you know. It just looks like I made it in the 70s or 60s. But I like that aspect of of playing with like tradition like that, tradition in painting, American painting mainly.
Why do you think this style suits you and what you want to do and what you want to portray or in your work?
Why does it?
Yeah, like why you went why this does it route?
Suit me?
Yeah, because you mentioned that you did do some figurative work.
Yeah, before.
And now you've gone down this and you even did printmaking, but now you've gone back to painting.
Yeah.
So I guess like why did you go this route to really illustrate what you wanted to show?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been a huge process. If you've looked at, you look at my sketchbooks from like as a kid on, it's always kind of like been, it kind of trips me out now because I'll look at them and be like, whoa, I was like thinking about this a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately it's just something that really pleases me to make aesthetically. Mm-hmm. I want to make things that interest me at first.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I make work, it is a one-on-one like process with myself where the first thing I want to do is make sure it is visually composed and interesting and captivating for me. And then everything else kind of comes after that. So where I am now is just where I am now, you know. Where I will probably be very different.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another thing that I didn't really want to like focus on, and I thought that art school would kind of instill that, was just like finding something that I like and then just keep doing it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of artists do that, and it seems to work for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can get a lot of notoriety and popularity that way when you create something and repeat it a bunch of times, and then it becomes like a staple of you. But I'm really into progressing in a way and mm-hmm. moving away from certain things. So like I have done like a bunch of straight edge stuff. But now I'm moving into very like looser applications of paint and pastel and things like that. I'm still in the same discussion of space
mm-hmm.
and kind of I'm really into now how these like this looseness of line and texture can create like a different feeling space
mm-hmm.
Other than the hard edge block stuff. So that's where I'm probably going to go to now. And then after that, I eventually see myself, you know, doing all kinds of stuff, you know, sculpture, installation, going back to working with the figure and painting people,
mm-hmm.
And moving away from the spatial stuff. But I think once I'm done talking about that, and I feel like I just want to flush this idea out mm-hmm. throughout the next couple of years, probably.
Yeah.
And then I'll probably move on to something else. But this is also like, I'm talking like years, like a pretty big timeline. That's what's great about art, you know? It's like you have this like,
yeah,
your whole life as a timeline instead of like, you know, I don't have right. to retire.
Exactly. You don't have to age 57 or whatever when you have to retire.
Yeah, or like athletes or something where it's like, if I'm an athlete, I'm already done.
Like, yeah, you're like close to retirement. Too old.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, one of the other things I want to talk to you about is some of the, I mean, the big thing is I wanted to talk to you about the art residency that you did over at mm-hmm. Facebook.
Yeah.
I've been always wanting to know because yeah. I've heard of these art residencies, but I don't know, crazy. Like, what does it entail, I guess? I mean, how does the application process work? Like, how did you even find mm-hmm. out about it? And then, you know.
Well, where do I begin with that project? It was an interesting project. I did not apply to it. So the person who is in charge of, like, curating
mm-hmm.
the Facebook Artist in Residency program is a very prominent Bay Area artist, Kristen, and so they did a good choice with that and having, like, you know, someone who's very connected into the art scene here mm-hmm. be the person to curate that stuff, because she's very like aware and knows what's going on.
Yeah.
So she approached me and she also works at Jux. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, she approached me to do the project. I was very, very excited. I was really excited because it's not just like a mural commission where most places will be like, hey, we have this wall. This is what we want you to paint.
Mm-hmm.
She really approached me by like asking what my dream project was, you know, and she was just like, what's your dream project? And I'm like, whoa, I don't know. Like, that's such a huge question.
Yeah.
But I mean, within that same vein, it's like it was really fun. I had no complaints at all. Like,
so it's a wall. It's usually like a mural type.
It's a mural. It's a mural. I could have approached it different ways. They pretty much gave me unlimited access to like what I wanted to do. Yeah. I had complete freedom. So I chose to approach this. How big was it? Like, I would say 55-foot long wall by 10 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
It was on a corner. There was two walls. One was 30, one was 25. And I approached it like a painting. So I did not use any tape I was doing a straight line composition. And that was really a challenge to do something that large and try to get the lines as straight and crisp as possible mm-hmm. without using any type of masking or tape, just freehand.
Mm-hmm.
So I put a lot of hours into that, but they also, I mean, they let me do whatever I want. So it's not like they made me do that. I could have done it anyway. And they gave me full access to Facebook. They gave me a badge. They treated me like an employee.
Wow. Yeah. How long did it last?
About two weeks. They gave me money to rent a car too. I like had a car.
That's crazy.
So I was driving down there. It was really like lavish. Yeah. It's like, well, I don't think I can do anything.
Well, I'm curious, like, who gets to see this mural?
So that is the not so great part, because that it's in their building.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an indoor mural in one of their office spaces.
Oh,
so
interesting.
It's not really for the public.
Yeah, it's just for the employees to enjoy. Yeah.
It was pretty much like a commissioned artwork.
Yeah,
you know?
To decorate the walls, basically.
And yeah, and typically I would be very like apprehensive about a project like that, especially working with the industry that is like
the least involved in the art community.
yeah, exactly. But Facebook is a little different. Facebook, their artist residency program has been around since Facebook started.
Mm-hmm.
It was started by like Zuckerberg's friend who was a painter. And they've had a lot of pretty amazing artists from all over the world and the Bay Area involved in that. Mm-hmm. So to be included in that conversation is like quite an honor for me. And, you know, could have been worse.
So did they, I would assume, like, is it your work permanent, the mural permanently there, or do they... I would assume like every time there's a new artist in residency, there's another wall or another space for them to.
Yeah.
And then does it just keep growing? I mean, I would assume that's their, that it becomes kind of their mm-hmm. public art collection. I would sort yes, of, right?
Definitely. Well, luckily they have a lot of money and a lot of buildings that they're building. So they're always like just being there. They're just building like a whole new headquarters. It seemed like it's crazy there. Like if you've ever been to the Facebook camp, it's just like another world. It trips me out. Yeah. I got in a little bit in trouble for taking a bunch of photos and stuff.
Really?
Well, just because it was so trippy, and they gave me like a badge. So I was just going wherever I wanted to go and taking photos, and it's just like, it's just like another world. You know, what's funny is like they have this area that they call like their classic campus.
Uh-huh.
And it was designed by the person who designed Downtown Disney.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it looks and feels like you're walking down this like promenade.
Yeah.
And they have like an ice cream shop, and they have all these different food places, like ribs and barbecue and burgers and a Mexican restaurant and arcade and everything's for free.
Right. Their own ESPN zone.
It's pretty much. Yeah. And everything's free. Nothing costs money.
Yeah.
So you just go in there and get food. And
that's
just
crazy.
They have like fridges with drinks, any type of drink you can imagine, just all over the place. And it was like this really utopian like it was really bizarre to be in, because it's like this is as close as like a utopian society that I've ever been in, where everyone's just walking around, chilling, and eating whatever they want, whenever they want to.
You know, it's interesting too, because it's the fact that they even hired the guy who designed Downtown Disney.
I know.
And you think about, like, you're trying to replicate that at a company where people work at.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you told me that you kind of got in trouble for taking pictures. And it's like, would you ever get in trouble for taking pictures at Disneyland? You know?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it did, it was, I'll have to say, like, in case they were listening to me, which I wouldn't doubt it, but it was a awesome experience.
Yeah.
I loved everything about it, and they were really like just so open to whatever I wanted, and were really like adhering, and it was great. But there is also like a kind of a darker twist to the fantasy of, like, you know, it's crazy that they're doing all this and it's amazing of their resources and how much food they have and all this stuff, but there's also like, it's a lot of it's there because it's a 24-hour campus. They want their people to work there all hours of the day. Like, Facebook will do their employees' laundry. Bring your laundry, your dirty clothes to work, and they'll wash it while you're working.
Yeah,
and give it back to you.
That's nuts.
It's like, you really don't have to leave. You get free breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Why would you? Why would you leave?
Yeah, why would you leave? Yeah,
it kind of puts a lot of the people that I have noticed in San Francisco in perspective.
Yeah.
Because it's like, they don't have to do anything. You know, it's like you probably went straight from college straight to this company that you don't have to think about your food, your clothes. You don't have to do anything for yourself. Then you kind of, I mean, you can kind of get entitled from that, you know, like,
yeah, it's true.
When things don't work out in your favor in the real world, you're like, why isn't it working out?
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, it kind of makes you think about the culture that, because like not everybody's going to work at these companies all their career. Yeah, they may work there for 5 years and they move on to a bigger company. That's interesting.
Unless they're loyal.
Yeah, that's true. Let's talk about your current show, man.
So
It's called Domestic Dive.
Yes.
And it's at Part 2 Gallery, which earlier we were talking about, which is basically 8th and B Gallery transformed to Part 2.
Yeah.
And it's here in Oakland. Tell me about it. I think the number one question was like Domestic Dive. Why that title?
Why Domestic Dive? Well, the way I think about the show is that, you know, Domestic Dive really, the show like kind of frames this idea of looking at memory and the validity of memory and the fragmentation of memory by using one of like the most intimate spaces that we have, which is like the home and community. Mm-hmm. So by that, it's, you know, you get these, I have this issue with memory where I have a terrible memory. It's just, that's the issue, is that it's bad. And when I try to remember spaces specifically, whether it's like 100% true is uncertain. So I'm constantly like being very critical of my memory in the terms of like questioning its actual validity. But what comes from it is like this realization that it's not really about the details of the space, but the feeling that that space has given me. So I try to translate that in a lot of the work, and having these spaces and these structures and interiors and exteriors that have no definite perspective. You know, it's you get perspective by putting one object next to another. You know, where in the paintings that I've been making, the object next to it is on a completely different perspective, plane than the one before it. So you get this kind of composition where you are put into this space and you can kind of navigate it the way you want to. And really what comes from it is this feeling that comes from the color compositions, you know, that it comes from the atmosphere of the piece. And that is kind of what becomes impactful. And so,
yeah, because you use very, and you repeat them, but very specific a color palette.
Yeah.
And you repeat the, I mean, it was like just looking at on the corner over there in your studio.
Yeah, yeah.
And you even have like a key or like a mm-hmm. glossary of kind of the colors that you use.
Yeah. And yeah. That, I mean, those are all for specific pieces too. So those aren't even, those are old swatches.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah.
So like for each piece, I'll probably have the colors on a, on a piece like that.
Yeah.
And then, so that way I know exactly where colors should go.
Yeah.
That one, draw the eye, like in a comfortable movement around the piece. And also colors that in a whole, like can like encapsulate like a mood or a feeling. I do a lot of like sunset-y type color palettes that, and I like to also place aspects of water around because those two combined are really calming. And imagining being on the water at sunset is a really pleasant feeling.
Yeah.
You know? So, and that's also, that's not for every piece, but the same, a similar idea for all the pieces. You know, it's like the color really does represent this feeling you get from a memory instead of the actual facts of yeah. that memory.
And it being titled Domestic Dive, it's interesting because there's this theme, you know, in our discussion today, you're from a suburban area,
yeah. right?
Like Anaheim, which is the suburbs of LA.
Yeah, very domesticated.
Yes, mm-hmm. I've been to Orange County, I've been to Anaheim.
Sorry.
yeah. And it's funny because you wanted to leave, you moved to a mm-hmm. city, you moved to a city, yes. and you've lived in San Francisco, now you live in Oakland.
Yeah.
And both of which are very urban in their, and they're very different mm-hmm. ways, but they're both urban. But you studied sociology.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like, you know, everybody, I mean, it's the most exhausted topic ever, but the domestic life, right? It gets picked apart in movies, gets picked apart in history in terms mm-hmm. of like the effect it has on American society and or what comes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of, I'm looking at your work, and I mean, it just could be me when I look at it, but I kind of see homes. I kind of see like a communal, yeah. like for me, I see like yeah. very community-based like apartments or homes, or like yeah. at least from what exactly. I put together in shapes. So I wonder what's the, from coming from somebody who comes from a place that mm-hmm. is like the cul-de-sac neighborhoods and the communities and, you know, the homeowner associations, you come mm-hmm. from the land of homeowner association.
I know.
What's the interest in that? Like, why is it you love?
Well, I think it's more of a fascination, you know, and same with sociology, you yeah. know, it's, I'm so fascinated by people. And it's interesting because I'm not painting people right
no.
now.
No, not
I'm
at all.
More so painting the spaces that they create.
Yeah.
But people have always interested me. I think that they're just, it's just so, so fascinating
mm-hmm.
What we do and how we do it. And, you know, compared to the community in Anaheim, in Orange County, Anaheim Hills specifically,
mm-hmm.
The homeowners association type mentality, where everything looks the same and it's,
yeah.
you'll get fined if it doesn't look the same,
yeah.
you know? Then coming here where it's a completely different aspect of community, even in the same state, in the same country, just a little bit of distance can create like a completely different atmosphere of community and traditions of that community.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at those, that variance, I mean, then you go overseas, it gets, everyone is living in these alternate different realities,
yeah.
you know, and it's all based on memory and how we perceive reality through our thoughts and not being critical of mm-hmm. our thoughts, you know. Usually, you know, when you're born into something, that's the way you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to break that thought.
Yeah.
But I like the ideas of community. I think coming up here, I had like a new sense of what it was like to be in a community, be in a Black community too, mm-hmm. you know, with
yeah.
other Black creatives. That has been something that has been really important to me. And just being involved in a community has been, something I really value. And I couldn't imagine not being a part of a community of some sort.
Do you feel like you developed that when you were growing up in the suburbs? Because, you know, they always, that's a big thing, right? That's all about, like, we all go to the same picnics, the same, like, little, our kids in the same little league. But you kind of, you wanted the one that suited you more, and, and that's what brought you up here.
I think so. I think that's a good way to think about it. Yeah, because the community down there is there. They have a very strong community, but it has nothing to do with, like, the things that I'm interested in and people like me, you know, to where it's like, I have, you know, I have friends, and I've always been like, I had a great high school. I had like a really fun time with a lot of great people, but there's always an aspect of being an outsider within me. Just like always not really for me, you know? So now coming here, I'm just like living my best life, just completely, you know, comfortable with what I'm doing. I have like community that does do the same things as me, that understand that like I'm not really like trying to go to the bar right now. I'm like trying to paint. So
and nobody giving you a hard time about it, right?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I got you, man. Okay, that's cool.
I mean, like, even I totally in San Francisco, that was like the case where it's like a lot of my friends were just like, all right, let's go out. And then I'm like, all right, I don't really want to, but I guess that's what everyone's doing. You know, I'm like, I'd rather just sit here and paint and drink at my house. Come over.
Hey, that's great. Well, so you said, you mentioned earlier off the mics, you're going to have about 23 works, you said, in the show?
Yeah, roughly.
And is this your first solo show? Or
this is my first solo show.
So self-curated, or is someone helping you curate the thing?
Self-curated.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did they give you the same artistic license as Facebook? Like, kind of just do your thing, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I would even have it any other way. Can't even, I guess if I like didn't care about it and I was just like, all right, here's this work, you can curate it. Maybe in the future that will be the case. But right now I'm like, you know, if someone gives me the opportunity of a space, I'm going to definitely have an input of what that looks like. So, yeah, I plan to curate it completely. So that's why I have about, like, 25 pieces, but I'll probably cut maybe 5-ish.
Yeah.
You know, probably around, like, 20, 22.
You're excited about this? Because you've done group shows, but you haven't really done anything.
I've done group shows, yeah. I've never done a show this big. It's the space is huge. I'm really excited about the space, more so than anything, you know.
I'm curious to see. I mean, just looking at the works, I'm curious to see how it fits, how you end up putting it in the space.
Yeah.
How you filled up the walls.
Yeah. I'm really, really thrilled about the space, because you get I'm going to be able to give larger pieces of work, like larger pieces, the space that I'd like to give them, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, even I've taken some works downstairs into the gallery with the lighting, and it just transforms the piece. I'm seeing it for the first time because of, there's no distractions. It's not in my studio.
Right.
Better lighting.
Yeah. It's like not next to your desk.
It's not next to my desk. Yeah. It's not in this like visual conversation of like everything else that's on my wall. It's on a pristine, like clean, like museum type white gallery wall. So, I mean, I'm excited to just see the work in that space, to be honest. And I'm also excited about the future of the gallery, of what kind of shows that we can have. So basically, I made this show. The owner of the gallery and the curator is on it. He's like one of the most professional people that I know, period. So he told me about this show over a year ago. Like, I had known about having this solo show for, I want to say, like, probably, like, 15 months. And that's back when it was in Athens B. So this was I mean, I've known about this show before it was in this new gallery.
Yeah.
It just kind of has played out to be happening right when this new gallery is opening. This new gallery was kind of like a really quick thing that wasn't planned out. I mean, it's been planned out, but it wasn't anticipated. So moving forward, I'm just really, really excited to see what people can do in that space. Like, because it's moved, I was able to have a little bit more time to do some bigger pieces that wouldn't fit in the old space. So I'm excited about that. But ultimately, if I get another show at Part 2, it will probably be a lot weirder and a lot less of a painting show. Because this show is going to be a painting show.
Yeah.
Nothing, no sculptures. I have a video that...
So you're already foreseeing it already. You already have an idea of like other types of mediums you want to work with.
I'm already like on some net. I'm already past this show for sure.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, going through the steps of getting that happen and being comfortable with like, all right, I can't just jump into some crazy shit right now.
Yeah.
I need to like focus on this show and then move elsewhere. But yeah, I plan on doing... things outside of painting, sculpture mainly.
Cool.
Sculpture and installation type stuff. So in this new space really, really puts the artist in control. So aside from me, I'm really excited to see who else, what other people do with that space.
Yeah.
It's a good space.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
I love talking to you. It was great.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, and hopefully I can have you on again and we'll, you know, touch base whenever you have the next thing going on.
Definitely.
But before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to plug the opening
again. Oh, yeah, definitely. So, yeah, Domestic Dive opens March 10th at Part 2 Gallery. So that's PT.2 Gallery in Oakland. That's going to be at 1523B. Webster, and it's a an interesting opening hours because we're trying something new.
Okay.
With the gallery hours, so it's going to be opening at noon on next Saturday at noon until pretty late in the night.
Well, and how long is the show till for?
It's up for a month.
Up for
it's
a month. It's
gonna be up until I think April 13th.
Okay.
I also have an artist talk.
Okay.
That I think is March 30th. I think it's like the last Sunday of March.
Okay.
Yeah, the artist talk would be good because I'm going to go be doing like a tour talking about each piece.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Cool. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you. Yeah.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Musée for coming on to the podcast. Just a reminder that his show Domestic Dive is currently on exhibit at Part 2 Gallery in Oakland and will run till April 6th. For more information and images of the work in the show, visit the gallery's website at part2gallery.com or visit the podcast website at artscenepc.com. You can also follow Musée on Instagram at Musée, and be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram or Twitter at artscenepc. Lastly, if you like the podcast, please let me know by leaving a comment on Apple Podcasts. It will help spread the word. All right, till next time.